try that again. Good afternoon.
Hey, there we are.
So, I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And we usually forget to tell you that, so we thought we'd get that out of the way early. All right, so today we're going to shift gears. I know we've had...
On We the People Radio.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, let's see. If you'd like to follow us on the chat room or ask questions online or whatever, you can do that through wethepeopleradio.us, and there's a ton of information on the webpage about our guests and the topic. I'm sure I'll add more during the show because we always talk about extra stuff. And what? Do you have anything to add?
No, I'm excited about our topic today. We're going to talk about Iran and
I know we ran into Fred and Ross yesterday, yeah, which was just a bonus.
Just a big bonus. We're going to learn about the government of Iran, the underground revolution, so to speak, that's going on over there, and what role we're playing. I mean, we got a ton of stuff to talk about.
Well, it's all been really, really current and in, you know, very much in the news. We did an interview, and I've got to link that on. It's been probably almost a year ago because I ran into Fred and Ross down in Sacramento, and I said, hey, we just interviewed a guy from your organization, the Organization of Iranian American Communities. And I think this guy, I read an article by the other fellow, and I sent him an email, and he came on with us. We learned a lot. And those guys said, well, hey, if you want to do it again, let us know. And then I forgot. I don't know. Just got busy. So I saw him yesterday. It's like, perfect. How about tomorrow? So
we had a great conversation yesterday, and the stuff we were talking about, I'm hoping we can cap on most of it today because it was super interesting, and it really shines a light on what our American government is doing to the Iranian government and how we are
and
really...
And the many mistakes we're making.
Oh, the many mistakes we're making.
Many mistakes. So let's see. I've got short bios. I have to add Fred's to the webpage, so it's not there yet. But Fred's been a human rights activist for over 30 years. He was arrested once in 1980 in the city of Mossad. It's pretty easy spelling. I think I got it right, but I could be wrong. After that, he had to leave the country and increased his human rights activity to be the voice of the people in the country. He's been active in his communities and mobilizing our community in Sacramento against Islamic fundamentalists in Iran. So for all those people that are like, well, why aren't the people? They are. They are pushing back,
they are
but
pushing
they have
back.
To leave the country in order to do it.
And being arrested in Iran is not the same as being arrested over here. Over there, if you get arrested and survive, that's like a badge of honor.
Probably makes Mexico look like a party.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Ross. Ross is a board member for the organization that I linked on the site here, the Organization of Iranian American Communities. He's a graduate of North Texas State University and a resident of Sacramento. Let's see, get to his, blah, 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 already told you that. After the fundamentalist mullahs usurping power in Iran, Ross became increasingly active in the Iranian American community projects. He has for over three decades been a successful businessman in the United States and a prominent Iranian American community leader. I've linked some of his articles, actually, on the webpage. So if you were to go to wethepeopleradio.us, you will find links to their organization, Ross's articles, their bios, and stuff like that. And I'll have the archive up this afternoon, probably pretty early. So if you want to send this show to somebody else, since there are a lot of people who could use some education on this topic, it'll be posted on there for you. You can push it out through Facebook and Twitter or email it to folks. Okay, so that's all the
there you have it.
That's all the announcements we've got, I think. So, Fred and Ross, I don't know who's going to start. Why don't you guys tell us which one of you you are, and then say a little bit so we know whose voice we're listening to.
Hello, Aaron, and hello, Bill, and thank you for your for having us today. My name is Ross Amin, and Fred is here with me.
Hi, good talking with you, and thank you so much for the chance to be able to speak about what's going on in Iran.
Well, thanks for coming on and sharing this information with our listeners. After speaking with you folks yesterday, I was pretty amazed at the mistakes we're making and the impact we're having in Iran. And that's really why I want to have you guys on here, is give us a lowdown on what's happening over there, and a little bit about yourself and some history about yourself, because I think folks would be really interested.
As you mentioned, we were active, on human rights, and we were against government of Iran and what they are doing. When I was in Texas, University of Texas, I for first time, when they took hostages, I was in the camp with in the campus with my other friends, and we were rallying against the hostage taking and government of Iran and the way they treat Americans. And so some of the agencies, they took my pictures and they sent my name to Iran. And I noticed by my family that I'm not going to be able to go back. And if I do go, they will take me, and like everybody else, they are going to execute me.
Oh.
So I decided to stay here, and I want to thank all American people for their hospitality and accepting me as a citizen. And but at the same time, I never forgot, what my people were going through, and what they have to do to just have a simple life. And I have been in contact with my relatives, my friends, in back home, and I try to be their voice.
How are your relatives being treated back there, with the government knowing what your role is here in the United States?
First of all, when my father was alive, they treat him very bad. They took him to their bases a few times. They questioned him, and they gave him very, very hard time, and finally he had a heart attack because of those pressure, and he died about 16 years ago. My mother is old, and my family, they are a subject of, harassment and stuff, but this is the price we have to pay to bring democracy in Iran and in the region, and peace in the region.
Because I know that our country, I'm going to say this, but I'm not sure I believe it. We think we're helping to bring democracy by, making the deal with Iran and all that. And all that is just patently false. It's just really messed up and made it more difficult for all of you, hasn't it?
That is a very good question. This is that's true. I mean, first of all, if you want to know what is it good deal or bad deal, this is a little over a year since we signed the deal with Iran. And we should know the mullahs and their mentality, their culture, what their goal is. And unfortunately, I can say that, this is not a good deal. The reason is, mullahs think that they are representatives of God on the earth, and everybody else is supposed to follow them because they are their message is coming from God. So it is really hard to talk to this kind of people with this kind of mentality. It's not hard, it's actually impossible. Right. And if we look at the fact since last year, we might limit their nuclear activities a little bit, but the ballistic missile, use of ballistic missile, and testing those missiles, and exporting terrorism, and they're active, they are increasingly active in Syria, Yemen, by supporting Houthis in Lebanon and all over Middle East, shows that they are not coming down, they are not backed down by their goal, and they are still following what they started it from beginning.
So prior to our arrangement with Iran, in which we handed over billions, they were struggling with money to fund a lot of these organizations. What's happening now that we've given them the money? Has that made an impact?
Yeah, I mean, that time, only thing that forced them to the negotiation table basically was their economic situation, their economy, because they were seriously in trouble. They did not have money to give out to terrorism like Hezbollah in Lebanon. They were behind, Iran was behind 6 months from payments to Hezbollah. So Hezbollah was in trouble, Hamas was in trouble, and also many of the Revolutionary Guards in Iran, they could not pay them on time. But as soon as we pay them the money, they all got the money, and they are able to sell oil right now. And we heard from one of the relatives that they put ad in the papers as soon as the agreement was signed, that we are hiring more Revolutionary Guard. Basically, what right. they get, anything they get, it does not go to the people. That's the mistake that some people or some officials make, and they think if they help or they give money to government of Iran, it goes to the people, which is not true. And it goes straight to exporting terrorism to Syria and to other parts of the world, you know. And they build more jails inside Iran.
And I would like, this is Fred, I would like to add one thing that since, you know, after the negotiation, actually in Iran, the number of execution in Iran is much, much more because of the Iranian government. They have more fear from the people, and therefore they need to put more pressure, especially on the young people and women in Iran. And really, the human rights issues, it has been much, much worse since last year. And then later on, I can explain to you some example of what right now they are doing inside Iran also to with more details.
Absolutely, because we were asking them yesterday, well, doesn't the government basically control the message in and out? And we need to take a really quick break, but maybe when we come back, they'll give us a little insight there. They don't have the control that they would like, which is why the West is still a threat. And I thought that was kind of interesting. Here I thought they had kind of an iron fist over the internet and all the rest of it. Apparently not. Even in Iran, you can sneak stuff through. You're listening to We the People. We'll be right back. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran. But I know Jesus.
That's very American.
Boy, it really is.
We're a little undereducated.
Well, the only thing we know about Iraq and Iran is what our mainstream media wants us to know, and that isn't much.
Yeah. So just to kind of tie up the loose end from the part before, you guys were telling us yesterday about the information flow in and out of Iran. Because, you know, my thought is that they probably, you know, I guess I was thinking they controlled all of that, and you know, people wouldn't know what we were doing out here, so why are we such a big threat? Let people know how that really works.
You know, in Iran, the media is very much controlled by Iranian government, and also the newspaper, they're all controlled by Islamic Guard. But on the other side, you know, what's happening inside Iran, there is a lot of movement, and there are a lot of political execution in Iran. All this news is easily coming out of Iran or the inside Iran by using the internet, and there are some app program like Telegram, which the people are able to use to pass all this information. And also, Iranian opposition, which has got a lot of members inside Iran, are able to get all this information and through the satellite we provided inside Iran. And this satellite, they are really helping all the news spread in Iran. You know, whatever that Iranian government, they're trying to cover all the execution or all the stopping any movement in Iran to bring it up to the Iranian people. And really the internet and like SMS system in Iran is helping a lot of information to be spread in Iran.
You know, yesterday you shared with us some of the stuff you have on your website. By the way, make sure you give folks that website address, because it has a lot of this information that you're talking about that the government doesn't want us to know. You've got on that website, and some of it is absolutely horrific. Let me pre-warn you, but there are things going on over there our media won't touch, but you do cover it very well on your website. And what is that website address?
Yeah, it is OIAC.org, which stands for Organizations of Iranian American Communities. And we basically have people in 43 states. We have organizations in 43 states and very, very active communities. And we are also, like you mentioned, we are involved with people in Iran and members of opposition. And we get all kind of information from them. Actually, one of the examples was on 2002, which Iran's nuclear activities was not known to the UN or to the outside world until then. And people in Iran, they exposed this to opposition organization, and opposition in 2002, they exposed it in Washington, D.C. for first time. And then from that time, all the negotiations through the, for nuclear deal started. Until then, nobody knew about it. So we get a lot of first-hand information from inside, which, like you perfectly mentioned, it's on the website, and everybody can see that.
Now, you showed us a video yesterday of a gathering of folks.
Paris.
Was it Paris? Tell us about that and how many folks showed up for that and what was covered.
Yeah, in July 9th, if you look on the Google and if you put the largest Iranian gathering in Paris, you can see them all. We had an annual meeting, which the people come from all over the world to have an annual meeting in Paris. And, of course, leadership of this organization, which is a woman, Mrs. Maryam Rajavi, she's in Paris, too. We had over 100,000 people in one place. And many members, many officials and former officials from United States came to that meeting too, such as Newt Gingrich, Tom Ridge, Michael McKenzie, former Attorney General, Ambassador John Bolton, and also we had Louis Free, FBI Director, and many of the generals, five-star generals or four-star generals, Howard Dean, Patrick Kennedy, Bill Richardson, and many others. And they all came message of solidarity and government change in Iran. And also from Senate and House, we got many video messages, like from Senator McCain, Senator Schumer, Ed Royce, Chairman of Foreign Relations in the House, Elliot Engel, and many, many others. And it was a huge meeting, and the message was free Iran and also changing government by people of Iran and their organized opposition.
So our government is quite aware of your organization. They're showing up at your rallies. Do you see the activity of our government changing with the change of administration? Do you think we'll become more involved in helping the opposition in Iran?
I think that it is because the current administrations always they are thinking of negotiating with Iran. So if they want to negotiate, they don't want to make them upset, and they ignore they somehow ignore the opposition. But if we are not involved in talking to them so much and negotiating with them, and we don't worry about negotiations so much, then we will talk to opposition, and which is legitimate opposition. They believe in a secular government. They believe in non-nuclear and, republic government. So this is the kind of people, the kind of government that people of Iran wants, and it should be supported. Basically, our opposition of Iran is strong enough to overthrow them. All they need is support, like political support. We don't need any money or any weapons, or we don't need any soldiers to go to Iran. But all we need is political support.
What we learned from our guest about a year ago, he said if we would just leave it alone, if we would just butt out, basically, that the problem would solve itself, that you guys would be able to gain control of your country again.
That's absolutely correct. Right now, the policy of Washington and the State Department is appeasing in Iran and negotiating with Iran. And really, if we remove that policy, that's just removing that policy of appeasement and just, let the people of Iran decide, then that's what happened after that. Is this human rights issues, the violation of the human rights issues in Iran is going to be more highlighted. And then based on only the human rights issues, what they're doing inside in Iran is capable to really put a lot of pressure in Iranian government. But right now, based on of appeasing mullahs, based on that policy, practically everything else is keep very quiet. Well, that is cause of a problem for Iranians.
Well, sure, because as you said earlier, you cannot negotiate with fundamentalists. It's their way or forget it. And so we have basically bowed down to that. We've given them their way. We've given them the money to
keep doing what they're doing.
And now we've made it worse. You explain it very well on your website, some of the human rights atrocities that are now taking place as a direct result of us handing over millions and millions of dollars
two sentences with some numbers. Just in case people are unaware, because I think most of us are, since January 2016, Iran has executed at least 230 people. That's at least one person per day on average. The number of executions has recently increased, and Iran ranks first in the world, followed by China, when it comes to executions per capita. They exceeded approximately 1,000 people. Sorry, 100,000. I got confused with Mao. 1,000 people in 2015. So last year alone, they executed 1,000 people. And we're talking about basic stuff. If you, I'm not going to read this whole article, but I scanned down a 17-year-old high school student. They decided that he was gay, so they hung him, a 17-year-old high school student.
Right.
So why anybody?
It's fear. It's fear-based, and this is why people have to either leave the country or operate in the shadows.
Yeah, it's not like the kid did anything.
Yeah, you'll get hung. You'll get assassinated.
So our country is all hung up on no bullying and all that. But some of the same people that are supporting that, which is predominantly our left leaning folks here, what they don't realize is all the things they support are executable offenses in Iran.
Absolutely.
So why would they support those people?
And I don't want to get off this human rights issue, but I want to go back. I want to circle back around to what you talked about with the oil in Iran. Previous to this deal, we had sanctions against Iran on oil sales, which was really crippling their ability to sanction all this terrorism around the world. Now, we've lifted those sanctions, and we talked a little bit about the numbers yesterday on what they are able to do now as a direct result of oil sales. Touch on that.
Let's let them do that right after the break. We've got to take one.
Okay, we'll take a break, but I want you to talk about the oil sales and what that revenue is really doing.
Exactly. We'll be right back. We are chatting with Fred and Ross. They are members of the Organization of Iranian American Communities. I think you'll find all this stuff super fascinating. And if you can't catch the whole show or you tuned in late, join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Keep your nose out of my business.
Exactly.
Hey, we're talking about what's happening in Iran, some topics that our mainstream media won't touch, or if they do, they skip over the details.
The good stuff.
The good stuff. But we were...
Okay, back
we were,
to oil.
Yeah, we were going to talk about oil, and previous to our last great deal we made with Iran, in which we gave them millions and millions of dollars to carry on their evil deeds... We also lifted some oil sanctions, and this enabled Iran to get a oil flow going and new revenues. And tell us about what's happening with that money and how much change it's made. How much oil are they actually exporting now?
In Iran, was exporting about 800,000 barrels a day last year, and right now it has been increased to 2.5 million barrels a day they are exporting right now.
Wow.
Which is a lot of money for Iranian government.
Sure.
But I would like to mention to you that money, Iranian government is expending, for example, in Syria, the United Nations, they are estimating, there was a report from United Nations that they are estimating Iran expending around $20 billion a year helping the regime in Assad in Syria. And also, Iranian government is the main financial for the Hezbollah also, which has to pay a lot of money to them too also. Therefore, for those money, practically Iranian government is expending for their terrorism activity for that area. And as we earlier, my friend Ross mentioned, that was the point that Iranian, because they need the money, they come to the negotiation, to sit on the negotiation table. And one thing also I would like to mention also, you're talking about how many people, has been reported that has been executed in Iran. These numbers only reflect the numbers has been announced by Iranian government. And usually the numbers are a lot more than that, because...
True.
Some of the people who get executed in Iran, they don't make, the Iranian government, they won't bring their name. For example, there was a secret execution in 1986, around 30,000 people that was not announced by Iranian government. And actually, it is a very major topic these days about in that execution, secret execution in that time by Khomeini.
Yeah, the massacre that Fred is talking, it was, I make a little correction, it was 1988, and it was, they killed 30,000 people, mostly teenagers and young people, in 2 months. And actually, last a couple of weeks ago, on August 12, Washington Post has a great article regarding that massacre by Brian Murphy, which I highly recommend anybody can go and online and read that article. So, like Fred said, you know, when we have more, when they have more financial resources, they execute more, they export terrorism more. And their priority is not are not the people. You know, their priority is surviving. And they think in order to survive, they have to expand their ideology and have more countries supporting them and bring more countries together. That's why you see them in Syria, and stubbornly they are helping the Assad regime, and they are killing children, women, and everybody else in Syria with help of Russia. And in Iraq, they are in control. They have about 65,000 Revolutionary Guard in Iraq. They are supporting Houthis in Yemen. And basically, Hezbollah is controlling Lebanon.
So
as you see, they are expanding. And what these resources, financial resources, help them to hold on to those countries and keep their expansion.
Now,
if we can put a heavy sanction on Iran, you know, they won't last very long. That's why we are saying what we do here is really important. We can put a lot of pressure on government of Iran and give easier challenge to people of Iran to overthrow the government.
Now, when you mentioned Saddam, when he was in power, he was a kind of an iron fist guy as well. But when he was in power, Iran and Iraq were locked in a pretty bloody war there for a long time. When he was ousted, what changes did you see occur after we got rid of Saddam? Because we're told that that just made everything better.
That is not true, because, I mean, when Saddam was in power, Iranian government was trying to divert inside internal problems to an outside tension, war, and stuff like that. That's another reason that they took American hostages, to divert the problem. And continuation of war for 8 years with Saddam, even though Saddam, after 1 or 2 years, wanted to have a peace with Iran, but Iran, Ayatollah Khomeini didn't accept that. Until their resources dried out and they had to come to negotiation table. So Iran is basically, I mean, looking for trouble. So whether it's Saddam or no, they always look for trouble because they have internal problems. And when Saddam left, basically, and after we pulled our troop on 2009 by President Obama's order, then there was a huge vacuum in Iran, which
in Iraq,
Iran took advantage of it and took over Iraq in totally, you know.
Bill, this is Fred. I would like to mention to you, you are absolutely correct. Saddam, you know, he was a dictator, but the way it was, that's what Saddam was like, a dam stopping Islamic fundamentalism to come to that area. Because when Khomeini, he came in power, the first thing he wants to do to spread the Islamic fundamentalism. And he starts creating Hezbollah in Lebanon, and then he starts helping the Sunni group like Hamas and others in that area. And that time, the Saddam was a huge dam and not letting this Islamic fundamentalist to come to that area. By removing Saddam, which I'm not supporting Saddam, but by removing him, practically give the opportunity to the Islamic fundamentalism to start to spread in that area. and that creates a big problem, which we can see today.
Yeah, that's, and we've heard that before from other guests who are from that region, that that was a really large destabilizing force. We had also talked yesterday, I'm looking at my notes here, about immigrants and the vetting process, people coming to this country. And you guys had quite a bit of information about that. I don't know if this is the right time to do it, but we just want to make sure we don't forget to cover that part. And I know you want to talk about solutions to a lot of these things. We've got a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah, we do.
Good thing we have an hour left. What do you think about the whole immigration thing?
Yeah, immigration part, like we talked yesterday, and if we were in their shoes, we had children, and they were bombing us all the time. Of course, we wanted to go somewhere else.
Sure.
That's natural. But what we have to do, when it comes to Syria, we have to support a no-fly zone area so they don't have to come out and they stay there. But when they come here, of course, we don't have enough information about them. And governments like Iran, like Assad, they try to give them a bad name. And they send some of their agents with them, along with them, to the other countries, and they create problems. So they want to stop, basically, the flow of immigrants to Europe and other places.
Well, you were
so that's the temporary solution for Syria to have a no-fly zone. But in long term, we have to force Iran and Russia to stay out of Syria and let them handle their problem and their situation. And I'm sure people of Syria do not like Assad, and they're going to overthrow him within a matter of days if he didn't have Iran and Russia back him up.
Well, you were mentioning that having a no-fly zone would really solve a lot of the immigration and refugee issues, because these folks, they don't want to leave their homes. They don't want to, you know, move to a country that knows nothing about their culture. They would rather stay where they are, but they can't. They have to get out of there. They're getting bombed every day. Their families are being killed. But you touched on the culture issue. What can you tell us about the difference in cultures when these people move to Europe or the United States, where there's no information about how they live and what their beliefs are?
Yeah, that's the way, you know. There is a cultural, you know, conflict we can see, you know, for the people who are not familiar with our system here. Therefore, I think it's not fair for them to suddenly push them, you know, from one area and then with something which really they don't want to be there, and they are pushed to be there. That's why we think in the point of cultural also is good for the people what they like to stay within that area, which is, you know, I think to have a no-fly zone in some part of Syria to these people to live with the culture who they are familiar with that, and is working for them much better than forced to come to the other countries. And that's why I think here in Washington, D.C., I hope I can see, you know, unfortunately it's not happening, I can see in the future there are some changes to the Syrian policy, and maybe they come up with the solution for all these people. Right now, we have more than 40 million people, immigrants, and this is the highest has been in any time right now. Therefore, this need to be really, this is a human right issue also, need to be more attention and better solution, instead of right now, really, I won't see any leadership in the world regarding to this problem. And you need to be more active on that.
We're gonna take another quick break here. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about ISIS and Hezbollah and how all these organizations.
How can you talk a little bit about ISIS?
Well, what's the relationship? Let's talk about the relationship between these groups and where their funding comes from, and why one day they're fighting each other and the next day they're all on the same side. So With that, we'll take a break. We'll come back
with Fred and Ross. And you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. These guys are representing the Organization of Iranian American Communities. You can find all that info on our website. Be right back.
It is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
We get a little crazy. No, we're never gonna survive unless we are a little crazy. Yeah, the people walking through my head. One of them's got a gun. Shoot the other one. And yet together they were friends at school.
Sounds a lot like a lot of places these days. Okay, so you were talking about ISIS before.
Yeah, we wanna
got rudely
talk
interrupted.
Talk about the relationship between ISIS, Hezbollah, these organizations that have sprung up and are at times battling with each other, and at other times they're side by side. How does that work?
Yes, that's a good question.
Good job,
when, Fred mentioned, when Saddam Hussein left, there was a vacuum which was filled by United States until 2009. On 2009, when we pulled out, there was a huge vacuum in Iraq which Iran took over. But Iran is was following like kind of sectarian policy. They were helping Shia militias and everything else against Sunnis. So Sunnis were unhappy about this situation, but they are like Sunnis are fundamentalist part of ISIS is fundamentalist section of Sunnis, and Ayatollahs are fundamentalist in Shia. But after that, when Sunnis organized their organization like ISIS, Iran took advantage of it. They worked with them, and even though they have some differences, which each one of them they believe they are represent for God, and one believes in caliphate, one believes in supreme leader. But when it comes to anti-West, anti-freedom, anti democratic movement in the area, they have a lot of common points together, you know. So that's why you correctly mentioned one time they fight each other, one time they are they're friends with each other. But I can tell you that you never seen a Revolutionary Guard killed by ISIS or an ISIS member killed by Iran.
Oh.
It's all propaganda. They never fought with each other, but they like to fight with United States, with the West in general, and they fight against any freedom movement in the region.
So what we're hearing over here is Russia is now making raids from Iran on ISIS. That apparently isn't true, is it?
It's not. It's not true, and even UN and all of their agencies, they mention that they are bombing opposition of Syria, opposition of Assad, and they are not fighting ISIS, basically. What the numbers are for ISIS, they estimate from 10,000 to 30,000 members for ISIS, which is not a lot in a big area like this. And if you look at it, their bases mainly are in the countries that they are controlled by Iran, like mainly Syria and Iraq. And basically they have a safe place, you know, as long as Iran is controlling them.
What you're saying is the Iranian government is supporting ISIS.
They are kind of, they are waiting on the side, and they are not harming them, they are not fighting them. As long as they are the threat to West, and they can, even they do have some conflict or some killing that Iran does, and then they blame it on ISIS. So they make it really bigger than what it is. But if there is no government like Iran to give them a safe haven in those two countries, I don't think that they can survive.
Oh, that's a good point.
You know, I would like to mention, like for example, on May 21st this year, the leader of Taliban, his name was Mullah Muhammad Mansour, he was visiting Iran for a month. And then when he was going back from Iran, going back to Afghanistan, at the border of Iran and Pakistan, he was killed.
Huh.
And, you know, a lot of people, they didn't know what's going on, why the leader of the Taliban, you know, is in Iran. But because he was killed, it came on the news. These are the connection, you know, we can see, even though Taliban, they are Sunni, but you will see financially, they are getting support from Iranian government.
All right, we're
constantly go to Iran.
We're going to get cut off by the news here.
And coming back.
Okay, let's pick that up. We're at the top of the hour. We'll be back in 5 minutes, and I want to talk more about that.
Yeah, because that is super interesting. We appreciate your information. We'll be right back with Fred and Ross. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.